have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
On today's episode, I have George Wellmer from Tupelo, a CRM automation platform, both specifically business brokers. Super excited. George, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I think this is fun for me. I know it's fun for me because normally it would be conversations with business brokers. It would be somebody who's doing transactions where maybe business owners can learn from it, or maybe other business brokers can kind of learn from it. And then there's you, like you're a vendor to the ecosystem, which is always fun to me because it means that you have insights to what works, what doesn't work, what people are doing well, the mistakes people are making, the things that get in their way, you know, as far as business brokers go. And so I love it. I've been looking forward to this because it's just a totally different approach. Plus, you do a lot of videos, a lot of presentations, you speak at conferences, you do a lot. So like, you're also very active and involved. And so kind of before we dive into some of the scheduled things, why don't you help everyone understand kind of your background, how you got into this, why a CRM for business brokers of all people, like how did this evolve and become a thing?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm the founder of Tupelo. We're working with close to 1,000 business brokers across the United States. Prior to finding Tupelo, I had a company called Interate that was automating valuations for SBA 7A lenders. Before that, I did a roll-up of sunglass manufacturing companies. And before that, I was in banking. And when I was doing my valuations for the SBA, I worked with brokers pretty intimately. They would quarterback those transactions as they were trying to get loans. And we just kept hearing time and time again, we don't have systems. We don't have systems. Nothing's really made for us. Came together with my co-founder, who's my brother, started Tupelo, and then it just took off. And we started going to all these different broker conferences and really immersing ourselves in the community. And here we are.
So let's talk about that with the systems. Like I just made a note, they don't have systems. What's the general mode of business brokers?
Well, I think this has really changed in the last 3 years since we've come to market, where we see more and more business brokers who are using systems to help them find listings, systems to help them sell listings. And Tupelo does a really good job at that. I'll still always say like one of our largest competitors is Excel, because there's so many business brokers out there that are using Excel to manage their operations out there. And there's some obvious shortfalls to that frankly to say.
Do you ever see a world where it's the, you know, brokers specifically are not on Excel? Or is that just always going to be a thing, like always a legacy tool?
I mean, brokers will, I mean, Excel has like, it's a great tool, right? It's great for doing financial modeling and things like that. But should you be using Excel to track your outreach, to track like who you sent NDAs to, who's inquired upon your listings? There's so many tools out there that automate this. We do a really good job at that transparently, where you don't need to like manually transpose all this into Excel to make sure that you're updating these records. Like the fact is, like if we look at business brokering as a whole, system-oriented brokerage firms win over the long run every single time. So you see brokerage firms who implement systems into their practices, they're able to sell more listings, they're able to sell better listings, and they're able to grow their practices.
So I'm just imagining the ones that are using Excel and trying to do all that. Do they end up actually updating it? Because I know here's one of the things, right? And again, this is not just for everyone listening. This is not a paid product placement for Tupelo or broker CRMs, right? Like I just want to have a conversation. Anyone that knows me, if you've ever tuned into my other podcasts in the past where I've talked to people who built or run CRMs, like this is the thought I have around CRMs in general. Spreadsheets and CRMs both generally involve some level of human involvement, which is then the the weak link in the process, right? And so, you know, assuming a broker is even updating their spreadsheet is a lot to assume. I see some brokers, they have six different spreadsheets because they start a new one and then they forget, and then they start a new one for this and this and this, and they keep going. And so, like, where is that balance between the automated side where things are filled in and then the broker still being involved and then actually still doing it?
Right. So like if we look at like content origination, let's call it. So a buyer inquires upon one of your listings. Let's say it comes from like a various marketplace. The broker really needs to capture that buyer's information. So name, email, address, things like that. And then anything additional to it, particularly like what's on the buyer profile that a broker would send out. So what types of industries is this buyer interested? What's their purchasing criteria? How much cash do they have? As long as the broker can capture all that information, like they're significantly ahead of what other brokerage firms are doing, because that information you can then leverage at a later point in time. So maybe that buyer doesn't want to buy this business, but you're able to query for that information to target that buyer at a later point in time. So that's like half of it, getting the information into the CRM, which we automate. The other half is like your human interactions that you have with that buyer. And let's say that's beyond email, because we connect to your email, so that information is then captured inside the CRM. But let's say you call that buyer and you're on the phone with them. You're like, oh, this buyer has really good experience in this industry. And maybe you want to write that note down. Like, allow those human interactions that you have with them, like it's still going to be on the broker at this time to transpose and write those notes down into the CRM. But we do a really good job at like capturing the overall information, I would say the buyer information, automatically for that broker.
I remember the first CRM that I saw that connected to an email, which would then capture all the incoming and outgoing emails, not necessarily done through the CRM, just from your Gmail or your Outlook or something like that, where it was just logging and capturing and then compiling them. And you just had this record of all of those and how amazing that is. I think a weak link in a lot of systems is like, you have to use the system for everything, which then becomes another thing that people have to manage. If you can get it to the point where it's just, you have to log your calls and make some notes and the personal things, but everything else is there. Like that's a huge difference for most people who are generally salespeople.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that we noticed like early on when we were building out Tupelo. Like brokers use their email for their general Discord with their clients. They don't want to log into their CRM to send these emails. So what we enabled brokers to do is connect their email to the CRM and then we capture all the conversations. So continue using Gmail and Outlook for your communication. And the CRM will capture that information for you.
This is something that I've heard from some brokers, right? And I'd love your opinion on this, is when I say, what are you using for a CRM? Not using anything, I have spreadsheets, right? And the spreadsheet's probably an evolution from Post-it notes, which is an evolution of piles of business cards. And at least they're on spreadsheets, I guess. And so then I say, you know, are you using a CRM? What do you think about CRM? Well, CRM is trying to solve a problem I don't have because I don't have that many transactions and I don't need help with that, right? What do you see with that? Again, you said like the successful brokers are the ones that have systems, whether it's Tupelo and other business systems in place. Like where is something like Tupelo, a CRM for business brokers, solving a problem that they might not even know they have a problem with?
Yeah, so I think it really depends on like how sophisticated the business broker wants to be. So like, in addition to like lead capture and like automations with, let's say, sending the NDAs, we also have like data rooms inside of Tupelo. So if that broker wants to run a confidential sale, having a secure vault, so like a data room to obtain that information from the business owners and share that information, track who has access to it and who has had access to it in the past, Tupelo also does that. If you want to send marketing emails, think of like newsletters or showcase specific listings, Tupelo does a good job at that. I mean, there's so many e-signatures, like we can do e-signatures. There's so many tools that Tupelo does where it's beyond the day-to-day workings of a CRM. It's really an operating system that brokers can rely on. If a broker is just using a spreadsheet for, you know, who's inquiring upon my listing, and maybe they're getting like two or three inquiries a week. Like, I can understand why a broker would want to do that by hand, but I know that they're also using additional services out there, two or three or four tools, when Tupelo would replace not only the spreadsheets, but all those other tools as well.
When you got into this, when you started this journey of thinking, here's a problem that I can solve, you know, with your brother, what do you see now versus what you thought then? And or what have you learned over the years?
Business brokers operate very uniquely, I would say. So like if we onboard one firm and then onboard another firm, how each of those firms operate isn't always the same. Like if we just take inquiry routing. So if an inquiry, if you get an inquiry from Marketplace on one of the listings, how firms route that inquiry is unique. Now, most firms will do like the principal broker, the broker that brought that listing to market would receive that inquiry. Other firms do something called relationship routing, where if a broker in that firm has ever spoken to that buyer in the past, then that inquiry would then be routed to the broker with that quote unquote relationship. So understanding like the nuances of this space, there was a fast learning curve there, but we were fortunate enough that we were able to onboard a lot of firms early on and be able to get line of sight into all of those, what we think, all of those nuances out there and make the system malleable enough for everybody.
I'm sure there's been a lot of times over the last several years where maybe you questioned and wondered, CRMs versus automating SBA business valuations, which what do you think?
Well, so the SBA valuations, I think, was a great place to be at a specific time, because it gave us line of sight into what the lenders, what the SBA lenders are looking for in the transaction, what's needed to get across the finish line, what's a good deal, what's a bad deal, what deals get rejected, and what deals get accepted. So we got to understand a lot of different lenders' credit boxes early on. And in addition to that, it like put us really close to brokers, which are our target market right now. The difference that we really liked with the brokerage and selling software rather than selling like automated valuations was the reoccurring revenue nature of the software sale versus the valuations. So for valuations, you'd have peaks for like 1 month, we'd be doing like 40 valuations. And then the other month we wouldn't be doing as many. So it was really hard to forecast what our life would be like on a day-to-day basis.
Which is interesting, because if we think about the world of the business broker, it's also the challenge they face too, right? Which is the, you know, it's a one-time transaction and then it's generally over. And then it's like, how do you just keep that going? How do you keep the pipeline full and not overly full, because you got to be able to manage the work and then get it done.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a core thing that all brokers talk about, is their cash flow cycles are lumpy, right? So 1 month they'll have a really good month, but you don't know when that next check's coming. It could be 6 months, could be 8 months, could be a year. And this is particularly concerning for new brokers who it might take them 12 months to find a listing. And then it could take another 12 months for them to actually sell that listing. So now we're looking at 24 months or 2 years before they even receive a check. So the industry itself, selling businesses, is not easy. I definitely sympathize with a lot of brokers, particularly the new ones that are coming on board.
When I first got introduced to this world from the consulting that I was doing with a client of mine, he basically said, like, new brokers he brings on, say, make sure you have 2 years of funds available. Just be okay with not getting a check for 2 years. If you're okay with that, then you're going to win and you're going to do the right things and not panic and not get desperate, you know, and stick it with the long haul. And if you can make it through 2 years with whatever transactions end up, then you're probably going to be successful if that's your mindset, which is a good segue into the next part here of the show, which is the rapid fire broker growth playbook. So in this segment, for people tuning in, I've prepped George a little bit, given him the idea of what we're going to cover. I know he has some things kind of planned, but my goal is to give you, the listener, you know, business brokers out there, any tips from George on what would help you with your pipeline growth, with helping the pipeline fill. It's obviously the Business Broker Growth Show, so that's what we're all about. And again, like I said in the intro, when I was mentioning you, George, when you were coming on here, is that what I'm excited and I love is that you have the insight, both from your valuation days, but then also with this, you see what works, what doesn't work, you see what people are attempting, the integrations, the intake flow, all of those different things. You have this cool behind the scenes view of a lot of different brokers and brokerages versus one broker who's doing it one way. So let's have it. Like, and again, whatever you want to cover, let's go through them. What would be, you know, broker growth hack number one on your list?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these will like merge together in here, so we can, maybe we'll jump around a little bit, but I think when brokers, or what I see brokers do, really well, or good brokers, what they do really well, I should say, is they have a target in mind when they're trying to figure out who they're going to sell their business, who's going to sell their business. So what does this mean? This means, if I want to sell a company, what company do I want to sell? Let's go down this, the next step of like who this person actually is. It's the business owner. Okay. Then the next step is, what industry does this business owner work in? What size is this business? What location is this business is? And the more granular you can get there, you'll identify who your ideal customer is. Once you know who your ideal customer is, then you're able to target them. So the problem that we see, like overarching with the industry, is brokers will say, I sell small and medium sized businesses. Okay. This is literally every single like market out there. So how are you going to stand out in a small and medium sized business owner's inbox? Because what a roofer, what an owner of a roofing firm is interested in is completely different than maybe what like a dog breeder or a dog, you know, daycare would be interested in. So the content that you're creating and your social presence online, the emails that you're sending, the phone calls you're having with them, is all going to be different. So I think the first thing that brokers should think about is having a target in mind. And obviously that's going to be a business owner. And if you can get granular down into an industry and location, that's only going to really help you out there.
Got it. So having a target, so who is the owner, the industry, the size, the location, as deep as you can into the persona, the actual business, and then sending that message. Quick side note, because this sounds really good, and there's so many reasons why it's so important, but what about that person who doesn't want to necessarily get pigeonholed in one industry per se, because they don't want to be known as the X, Y, and Z industry person, because they don't want to limit who they could help with?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing here is you don't have to only sell a specific business in a specific industry. Now you might, and maybe you pick like three industries you want to target. Maybe you want to pick one. That's totally fine. But let's say you want to remain to be an agnostic broker. I mean, you sell businesses of all, you know, shapes and sizes. This also like applies to you, because the messaging that you send to these business owners, the more vertical specific it can be, the better response rate you're going to actually have. So if you want to sell car washes, laundry mats, dentist office, all that sort of stuff, great, you can do that. But when you're communicating with those business owners, make sure the messaging that you're sending to them is aligned with what they want to receive.
Yeah. And when I hear you talking about that, it reminds me of the fact that everyone cares about themselves. As humans, we are all self-centered. We think we're the center of the universe. We're the hero of the story. And then business owners, based on what they've built, they also, my experience is they all feel like they've built something unique. Their car wash is different than someone else's car wash. So you have to know car washes, and that might not even matter, because you have to know their business, even though the fundamentals of business are basically the same when you get deep enough. But you're right, like having that message that resonates, having the marketing, and not trying to be everything to everybody. I think that's so key. So what would be number two on your list, as you probably just keep the same thing flowing?
I see a common thread in the industry right now of brokers who are becoming vertical specific. So that's like attending, like leaning into specific industries. So that means like attending those industry conferences. And again, you don't have to pick just one. You could pick two, three, four, whatever you're bullish on. But try to become a system matters expert in those industries. So like if you want to sell, let's say, a dentist office, go to the dental conferences. Try to speak at the dental conferences on like how to sell your dental practice. Have a booth, talk to these owners, maybe create a newsletter that's targeting, you know, dental practice owners. So leaning into specific industries, and I think this kind of merges one and two, is like having your content be catered toward the receiver is a, you know, important thing if you want to grow your practice.
Yeah. I think that's huge. You know, some of it is you got to be able to speak the language. They've got to trust you. You know, the more you're known, I think it's important. And it's tough because that means you do have to kind of pick some verticals, some industries that you're going to commit to, at least at some level, and have some presence. Okay. And so what would be number three on your list?
Yeah. So we see brokerage firms that are successful and growing as they automate repetitive tasks. So like the big thing in the industry is if you have a great new listing, right? Like let's say it's an HVAC company and it's doing 600,000 in seller discretionary earnings. And you post that listing up on one of the various marketplaces, you're going to get like 200 inquiries in the first 24 hours. If you are manually sending these NDAs and following up with these NDAs manually, you are going to waste weeks of your life. And the fact is like most of these business, most of those people inquiring are not going to buy this business. Only one of them is. So you want to automate that repetitive task to be able to, you know, focus on higher dollar value activities. Higher dollar value activities generally means you're spending time with the business owner as prospects and the business owners that are under contract, helping these deals get under contract as well as sell those deals.
Got it. So automate repetitive tasks. It's one of the things I give people similar advice. I love that you brought this up. Is we're recording this. It's 2025. Like literally I could just order anything I want on this little device that I carry in my pocket and get most things done for me. I have access to all the information. It's like, why are people still doing manual tasks over and over again that shouldn't be done? And I love what you said, which is the follow on to that is the high dollar activities, right? And things that only the broker can do and should be doing, which then is the most valuable parts of the business. That's what should be left and not all the busy work that comes from.
Right. We see brokerage firms now that are acting a lot more like companies than ever before in the past, where they're building a team around them to support their activities. So they might have like a business development team that's cold calling and sending emails to prospects. And then once that prospect engages, that's when the broker jumps in to try to close that deal. And then once they close that deal, maybe they'll hand it off to, you know, a junior analyst to do the valuation, prepare the marketing materials, bring it to market. And then they'll have the systems vet all the buyer inquiries that come through. Maybe that junior analyst will also interview those buyers to make sure that they're a good fit. And then when it comes down to your 3 or 4 or 5 LOI potential candidates, that's when the principal broker jumps back in to vet them. And then any negotiations at the end, they're going to jump back in at there. So that broker is really focusing their effort on these critical points in the transaction, which are going to create value for the overall transaction.
And if you think about it at that level, which might not be many brokers listening to this, some of them might be, it's really like if you think about when you go to the doctor or the dentist, the amount of time and effort that the doctor or dentist spends with you and what they do versus the whole transaction and process of it. From the moment you show up at the dentist's office to the time you leave and they charge you or whatever it is, like the more you can focus in on the high dollar, high value, high hourly rate type tasks.
Yeah.
Even though this is like a commission transaction, then the better. And if you can't do that, if you're a solo broker or a small office and it's mostly you, how can you automate things? How can you outsource things? How can you bring in technology and tools to do some of that heavy lift and just over time try to put systems and processes in place, even if you're a one-person shop, right?
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of one-person shops now. I mean, don't get me wrong, Tupelo helps a lot with a lot of this stuff, but a lot of one-person shops will bring in a virtual assistant to help out with these transactions. And again, like we see a growth in junior brokers that are coming on board where the principal is, you know, virtually coaching this person up. So virtual assistants, technologies, and like junior brokers will really help a broker focus on those high dollar value tasks. Dentist office is a great analogy. I need to steal that one.
You got it. You can have it. All right. So the growth hack that you had, 1-2 punch, automate repetitive tasks. From my advice, adding on to what George said, if you find yourself doing something more than once or twice, like the second or third time you do the same thing, figure out a way to automate it or outsource it. Just stop doing it. And then the second part of the 1-2 punch is to then leaving yourself for the high value, high dollar tasks. So, and then growth, you have one more, you have another.
Yeah, one more. And like this I think is, not something that business brokers do all that well, is they share their knowledge with the broader community. That means like posting to social channels, maybe creating a blog, maybe creating a newsletter to share your knowledge on what it's like to sell businesses successful. And maybe that's even catered to business buyers, like what it's like to successfully buy a business. The thing that's happened in this industry is it's a bit more tenured. So all this information is stored in the brains of, you know, thousands of brokers out there. And it's not really that readily available to the SMB buying community, the SMB selling community out there. So in order to fill this gap, there's been a lot of like influencers and buying programs out there that have tried to coach these people, but they don't have the same knowledge as what a business broker does, who's done hundreds of these transactions out there. Like, I would like to see more business brokers share their knowledge out there in like the digital universe out there. I think that would just do a lot of goodwill for everybody. And then in terms of like how that can help you find businesses to sell, is business owners are now more savvy than they've ever been. And they're looking online to see like, who's going to be the best person to sell my business. If they can see all the content that you've created and how you're the expert in selling businesses, maybe that's in a specific vertical, they're going to be a lot more likely to inquire upon your services rather than, you know, some random person out there, quite frankly.
Yeah, I love that, right? So sharing knowledge, sharing that information, other than brokers maybe not having the bandwidth or not thinking they know how to do it or getting too busy, like in transactions. Any other reason why you think they don't, or anything that you've seen why they're not sharing their knowledge and wisdom?
They probably never have done it before, like quite frankly. Like it's not that common in the industry to share best practices digitally. Like if you go to like an IBBA conference, or if you go to a regional CAB conference or MBBI or something like that, like the amount of knowledge sharing that's happening in those conferences is incredible. But once you leave that conference and you all go, you know, remote, that conversation generally dies off and it's not as accessible, quite frankly.
Yeah. I always wonder where it's the balance between the tipping point between the, like, not having the bandwidth of, because they're busy in transactions or busy with other things and not thinking about it. It's really a farming strategy. So you're putting that content out there, sharing, and who knows when it's going to come back to you, versus like, I need listings now. And then where is it also some level of scarcity mindset, which is where if I share all the things that I do, other brokers might learn from it, which there's enough transactions, enough businesses out there. In fact, I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago, and he said what he's scared of is that if every baby boomer business decided to sell like next year, there would not be enough brokers to handle all the business. No. Right. So there's just potentially more than enough, always more than enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the overarching thing, like you're putting content out there and it might not get you a lead tomorrow, but down the road, like you're still sending like your normal channels out there. So maybe this is direct mail. You're relying on your like relationships. Maybe these are like CPAs, attorneys, and things like that to help funnel you leads. But the fact is once that business owner is thinking of selling their business with you, the first thing they're going to do is they're probably going to Google you and check out your website and reviews. And maybe you have like YouTube videos or something like that. They're going to look at all this stuff, and the person that has all this information readily available, it makes it so much easier to win these deals.
I love that. Normally at the end of this growth segment, you covered a lot of stuff. I would say, what is your top one? What's the one, if you could only pick one? I don't think you can. I think, like you said, they all kind of blend together into one overall thing. I don't think you could pick a favorite child from that list.
Yeah. I mean, selfishly, like everyone should have systems, so I can definitely pick
automate that. Everything have tools.
Yeah. But we obviously want you to have listings that you can use those systems for, so that everything I think we've won over is important.
And it's true, right? Because it's like, hey, the CRM guys say automate everything. That's great, but you also have to have the listings and the business and the authority and the prospects and the, you know, so all of it kind of plays together, because you can't just sit around and have amazing systems, because then you're just gonna be broke with systems, right? So you've got to do all of it, basically, like you said. All right, so let's get into the next segment here. This, the one that got away. So this is usually the lessons from a lost deal where I talk to brokers, we talk about deals that they lost, then what they learned from it. It's usually a point of like, that sucked, but here's what I got from it. Hopefully this can help other people, just kind of those lessons. Obviously, you're not directly doing broker business. We could talk about the deal that got away from a SaaS side. Maybe you want to share something like that. Maybe it's just what you've seen because you've dealt with so many brokers and so many transactions, maybe from the valuation days. Like, what stands out as an example of something you saw where like a deal fell apart, maybe it shouldn't have?
So like, if we hear all the time from like broker horror stories of like, this deal fell apart because it was like a difficult owner, or time kills all deals, right? This is another like common theme that we always hear. Time kills all deals. A lot of times, the reason why time kills all deals is because the broker who's selling the deal oftentimes didn't do the due diligence to prepare everything when they brought it to market. And that's where like someone like us comes in handy, because we make it easy for the business broker to obtain those documentations, to do the valuation of the business, to pre-qualify that deal, quite frankly, before it even comes to market. So the broker has already checked off like a lot of those different checkboxes before the listing even comes to market. And then when it's like going to market, like we're also helping the broker like vet these buyers, so they're not spending all this time on the buyers. And then when they pair finally a buyer with the deal, it's been pre-qualified, you have the documents, you can share the documentation, and the buyer could then obviously share that with whatever lender they go with to get the deal across the finish line. So the deal horror story is time kills all deals. But in order to not have that be your horror story, is like, prepare yourself. You know what's going to come. So prime the owner, first of all, and then get the documentations from the owner and their team, whether it's accountant or whoever, when you're bringing or before you bring that listing to market, because the buyer's going to ask for it, the bank's going to ask for it. And if you don't have it, it's just not setting yourself up for success.
I think that's great. Here's the main takeaway, because I've heard that time kills all deal. We know that. Anybody in sales, anyone in transactions, transactional sales, like obviously brokerage is more than just a transaction, but at the end of the day, it's a transaction, just like a real estate transaction, a mortgage, things like that. So there is that element to it, that the longer it goes on, the worse it could go. But the thing I take away from that that's fascinating, and this is my kind of what resonates with me too, is that if you're a broker or a salesperson and you're worried about what somebody might ask for, let's say on the buying side, or you're hoping they don't ask for X or they don't ask this certain question, then that means you don't know the answer, or you don't like the answer, which means it's going to come and get you, right? Like if there's something that's making you worried that someone's going to ask, make sure you fill in those gaps. Obviously a checklist, having a system in place to make sure you don't miss those. But that's where the time kills, because you don't have an answer, you don't have the document, things go on, people start getting nervous, and then things fall apart, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, so much of this like time can be cut off on the front end if the broker obtains all that documentation, because where the lags come in is the bank's going to ask for this documentation, then that underwriter's going to ask their this development officer, BDO. The BDO is going to ask the broker. The broker is then going to ask the business owner. The business owner is going to ask their accountant. And then this, you know, deal is going to push out for weeks, if not months, because the proper documentation wasn't obtained. And I understand during the whole transaction process, like you're probably going to need to get documentation, like monthly financial statement updates, things like that. But having systems to help you get that documentation will just make the whole process go easier.
Again, that goes where the time kills all deals, because anything can happen on the buyer side, the seller side, anything in life could happen. I mean, I've seen deals fall apart in other realms where there's literally someone passes away and then it's over. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's basically a race against the clock and making sure that you have everything ready, and you've just got to be on top of it. I love that. I think it's an important lesson for everyone to take, and for the right reasons, you know, to making sure that it's just smooth and easy. Things will pop up. Just want to stay ahead of it every time. All right. So before we get into your final thoughts and then how people can reach out to you, I just want to take a moment to remind the audience what we do here, why we're here at Business Broker Growth. And, you know, part of doing the show is our mission is simple. So we want to equip brokers with modern marketing systems that replace guest work with growth. It's really a lot of the stuff that George was talking about with systems and processes and having a target and doing all of that. literally is the same thing that we help brokers with. And our goal is that we know that they're great once they get in the room. Our goal is to help them get into more rooms with the right people so that they can do more transactions. They can focus on what they do best, their high value tasks. And hopefully with people like George can help automate the rest of that in the transaction mode. And then our team takes care of done for you services and ways to help brokers with their marketing. So that way you can just do what you do best. So, all right, George. So final thoughts, as we're thinking about everything here, if you had to give brokers one piece of advice, maybe it's something you've already covered and you want to remind them, or something else that comes to mind, you know, to help them really on the like winning more listings, winning more referrals, helping with their growth, what would that be?
I think the first thing to do before you do any of this is like, look at your current processes, right? What are you doing right now? Try to map that out and identify which of these tasks that you're doing provide a lot of value to your deal. Mm-hmm. And those are the tasks that you want to work on. And then everything else, you try to leverage systems, outsource. So you don't have to do it, quite frankly. And oftentimes, these tasks that you don't want to do or don't provide a high level of value, maybe you're not like the best person to actually do this, quite frankly. So like if we look at design work for building sims, right? Everybody loves to have a pretty sim, CBR, or teaser. Like brokers aren't designers, but there's plenty of services out there and tools out there, Tupelo being one, that can help you build beautiful sims. So rather than spending, you know, a week trying to build this perfect sim and at the end of the time, like it doesn't look like the way you want it to, like leverage what's available to you so you can spend time actually, you know, finding new business owners to work with and then closing the transactions that you have now.
And I think that's always important, right? And analyzing what you're doing now, what's working, what's effective, what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy. There's definitely some good books out there. I'll link them in the show notes so people can check them out. Not for business brokers, but just in general. One's called Who Not How. Another one is Buy Back Your Time. And it's really about like that mindset. So I love that you brought that up. Now, for people tuning in, watching this, listening to this, all of these links will be in the show notes. But if you want to connect with George, the best thing you can do is go to TupeloSMB.com. It's TupeloSMB.com. You can also email him, george@tupelosmb.com. You can find him on LinkedIn, George Wellmer, W-E-L-L-E-M-E-R. So if you just search or go to LinkedIn, find George Wellmer. Also has a YouTube channel. We'll have it linked below. I will say, I mentioned this in the intro, George, is that you're great with the content. You put out some great videos. There's always value. I love what you're doing for the community as a whole, not just like, hey, I have this product I just want to sell to you, but like trying to elevate it, following your advice of putting out content, sharing knowledge, sharing wisdom, just to elevate the whole group. So anybody who's watching this, make sure you follow George, LinkedIn, YouTube, connect with him. Like I've learned a lot from your videos and your content. So
we'll keep doing it. We'll keep pumping out content.
There we go. And George, I appreciate you being here and sharing everything with the audience and being a part of this. Thank you for your time today and you know, for being on the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. And for everyone else, appreciate you tuning in. So glad you're here. Our goal is to help you. Hopefully you took some notes, take action on some things, put in some systems and processes like George talked about. Just really find ways to automate what you can, focus where you need to, grow your business. And remember, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.